Well, after Scott did an excellent job of communicating our relationship with the law, kind of a foundational level of Christian ethics and how we kind of make decisions about what's right and wrong, we're going to take on the first issue, which is probably the most defining ethical debate of modern times. And I think it will continue to be so for a long, long time because both sides aren't really going anywhere. But just kind of sitting back, I kind of compare this to the ethical discussion of slavery, which went on for in real earnest for about a half a century before it really ruptured the Union. We've been kind of hashing out abortion and the stance on abortion since at least 1973, but there was even some buildup to that moment as well. But why do many pro-choice advocates feel so strongly about abortion? In their mind, what's at stake?
I didn't hear the question.
Why do so many pro-choice advocates feel so strongly about abortion? And feel like this is a moral issue that they get behind. They will boycott states that try to limit it. Yeah.
A lot come from the perspective of equality between men and women. So they view it as something that only affects women, and therefore to limit a woman's right to decide when they give birth and have control over that.
Mm-hmm.
To force them to have a child, it's some sort of just it's like a discrimination, something that men are not forced to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it threatens the right of the individual,
Okay.
Kind of the my body viewpoint. That's one
yeah.
main way.
So you kind of brought in two threats here.
Yeah.
I think one is kind of egalitarianism, and that women are at a, we'll call it a disadvantage in their minds,
mm-hmm.
and for them to not have control over that puts them at a disadvantage. Okay, then you also brought up my body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, other thoughts on why pro-choice advocates feel so strongly about this?
I agree. I think it goes back to equality, especially workplace equality.
Uh-huh.
That you can take in any direction of going back to the salary or whatever, that a woman being forced to have a child limits her in the workplace compared to a man.
Uh-huh.
Don't have that issue.
Okay.
Well, like when Audrey was born, I could have taken, let's see, she was born Sunday morning, so I could have been at work on Monday if I really wanted to, whereas Katie, there's no way.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Other thoughts on why they feel so strongly about this issue?
I heard a story on not too long ago on NPR, and they were talking about abortions in Texas, abortion clinics and stuff, and how there's so few of them. And the people that they were interviewing, it was really hard to listen to because one young lady was saying, well, the place was 2 hours away, I'd have to drive 2 hours to have an abortion. Like it was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a problem, but I mean, that was the problem, was that it was a 2 hour drive because the clinic in her town shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to listen to that, but they're, she's like, I just wasn't ready to have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there needs to be education before educating people about abortion. It's educating about not having sex if you're not ready to have a kid.
Yeah.
Because that's the result.
Now you touch on another
that's
issue
the exact
too.
Thing, right, is that without abortion, sex and family remain linked.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you're on birth control, many people who have abortion are birth control users of various
mm-hmm.
forms.
Yeah.
And so in order for us to have easy everywhere with anyone, anytime sex, men and women,
mm-hmm.
we have to be able to kill the product of that sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is part of the reason why a lot of boyfriends pressure their girlfriends into killing the baby.
Yeah, I mean, the men take this, like, moral high ground by saying, well, I don't want to tell women what to do. No, actually, you do. And if this was not legal, you would be telling them to get rid of that baby.
Yeah, because I don't want to be linked to you for the rest of my life
right.
through this child.
Right.
And it's a similar, you can see similar lines of reasoning along separating sex and marriage. So that's why they're so adamant. thing that ties marriage, sex, and children together is
mm-hmm.
they want to destroy so that they can reject that created order and
mm-hmm.
design.
Yeah.
And if you make it a sin, if you make it wrong morally for anyone who's actually moral, can you imagine if everyone finally decided that abortion was an immoral thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Aside from a sin,
mm-hmm.
there'd be an awful lot of people who would be convicted of past sins with
yeah.
a lot of guilt.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and that's another interesting angle, too. You know, if you say it's murder, you're going to get the, so are you calling me a murderer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, other thoughts on why it's so important?
You probably argue for economic equality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not just economic equality, but economic well-being, with the idea mm-hmm. that fewer babies means women are in the workforce,
mm-hmm.
means... You know, those countries tend to do better economically, and it's true, they do.
Yeah.
Freakonomics? Are we talking about, like, the, what are we at? What's the question? Well, before I say what I was going to
say, why don't you go ahead and weigh in on what you
just jump in.
The question is, why do many pro-choice advocates feel so strongly about abortion? In their minds, what's at stake?
Yeah, so Freakonomics, the guy talks about how it probably lowered the crime rate. He makes a case.
Mm-hmm.
Having abortion legal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
in the 80s, that there was a decrease in crime, and he attributed it to Roe v. Wade.
And then he then say, well, if that's your justification, why don't you just go into inner cities,
just wipe them out,
mm-hmm.
and kill all the young black males?
Right,
because they're statistically
yeah,
right.
But
that would also lower crime rate.
Would statistically, and so like when someone said, so it's a good argument that statistic is how. Abortion is one of the most racist things because it's very, very disproportionate.
Yes.
Towards different.
You know, if we murder the murderers, we'll reduce the amount of murder.
Right.
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 You just have to murder the murderers.
Exactly.
So
that was my argument.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I think we're kind of reaching one of the reasons why I like to time my ethics discussion during an election year
mm-hmm.
is you see everyone's morality come out. And we are seeing kind of a digging in where if you look at how Republicans are really digging in on the Second Amendment and gun rights and not giving an inch, you really kind of have the same element, you know, on the left when it comes to abortion rights. And it used to be that abortion was supposed to be safe, legal, and
rare.
Not anymore.
Now we celebrate.
Now, abortion is linked to health care
mm-hmm.
and the ability to receive health care.
I always like to point out that in 20 years of practicing medicine, I have never once prescribed an abortion to save the life of a mother,
mm-hmm.
unless it was an ectopic pregnancy. I mean, that baby's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So...
And you're in emergency
room. I'm in the emergency room.
Right.
Yeah. Never. Not one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's mental health. It's
mm-hmm.
mental health.
Yeah.
Which is very nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
That's called the conscience.
This is stressing me out. So why do many pro-life persuasion, why do so many of the pro-life persuasion so vehemently oppose abortion? Murdering, yeah. Other thoughts? I mean, that's the dominant one, right? But are there some tangential ones?
What did you say?
I mean, obviously, murder of an unborn child is a reason why we oppose it. Are there other reasons? Complementary reasons?
See into the womb, we can do surgery in the womb. I mean, so the humanity of the child
mm-hmm.
is on your refrigerator, big sibling is holding it, everyone grew up seeing it in their baby book, you know, like the
gender reveal parties
as an image bearer, but just as a human person who's
yeah.
like me and
mm-hmm.
given time and normal circumstances will be like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's scientifically undeniable, even kind of visually undeniable now.
Yeah.
In a way that even when I was younger, when I was growing up, I don't remember that. It was like you would really have to argue whether or not this is life and whether they could move
mm-hmm.
and do things in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now you see them like playing games in the womb, you know? I mean,
yeah.
like that wasn't in our consciousness.
Right. The line then was it's a blob of
it's a
cells.
Blob
mm-hmm.
of tissue.
It's just a blob
mm-hmm.
of tissue.
Yeah.
And we have absolutely turned that on its head.
Yeah. I think one thing I was thinking about as well is the concept of gender reveal parties.
Oh, yeah.
I don't, I'm not sure they had gender reveal parties
no.
when we had our kids.
No.
Well, it was the birth, right?
It was the birth.
Right.
The birth was
right.
the gender reveal party. But we all we would know the gender before.
Or you call and you say, we're having a boy.
Yeah.
That
but now, like,
yeah.
now there's like
yeah.
this big social media event
right.
Revealing the gender of your child, which I think is a good thing, right? I think that's something that kind of points out to the humanity.
Right. That by 16 weeks, this is now a human. Gender.
And we have blue balloons and pink balloons. You know, there's all kinds of things that I love about that.
It's definitely changed to the discussion because now many like can read or hear statements from pro-abortion that acknowledge yes, it is a human life, but the mother has the right to.
Yeah.
So
that's the change. That's the shift, right? Because
yeah.
before it was like, this isn't even a life.
Right. It's not a life.
Body.
And you thought, well, the only argument that we need is to show that this is a human life.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Then,
and now
okay,
that
it's wrong.
Because
yeah.
now this goes back to the we're kind of in this post-truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
a life. It's sure,
a life.
But I have the right to take that one.
And now this life, it's a life, but it doesn't have constitutional rights.
Right. It doesn't have personhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Person
changing
theory. Yes.
Okay, so this is kind of this is kind of where the direction's going right now in the discussion.
This
that
is
a human being does not equal a human person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
person is that is a status that is afforded universal rights. And just because something is a human being doesn't make it a human person. So that's kind of the latest philosophical angle
mm-hmm.
That's being advocated in that, where there's kind of a rupture of that. So we'll interact with this whole idea. Does being a human being make somebody a human person?
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, and there's all kinds of ways that you can argue about this. And one of the reasons why I kind of introduced Christian ethics when I came here to Flint Hills Bible Church is I was kind of amazed at, I would have everyone raise their hand in the class, say, how many of you think abortion is wrong? We'd all raise our hands. And then I would ask, where in the Bible do you find it? Where is that prohibited in the Bible? And a lot of people couldn't. And Bill Clinton, during his presidency, I mean, he always claimed to be a Southern Baptist, an evangelical Christian-ish. And he, he said that, I went through all the passages that evangelicals give me that say the Bible prohibits abortion. I just don't see it. And he's a smart guy. But I think there is a, hey
miss
man,
anything?
Pastor points for you.
Family convo, I finally got it.
Yeah. But I thought that was kind of interesting. So I kind of went through those passages myself. In my mother's womb, you conceived me. And there are certain deductions that you do have to make, which I think are solid. I think the Bible has a very clear testimony. I think biologically, ethically, biblically, it's very clear. But there are a bunch of arguments out there that I think kind of muddy the waters. And I think one of the reasons why abortion is such a big issue, it's kind of a real wedge issue in Christian political engagement, right? Like you would have some people who are more on the liberal side who say we should reduce the number of abortions. We should limit the number of abortions and take care of those factors factors that lead to that versus other people who say it's murder. It's like trying to reduce the number of slaves versus elimination of slaves. you also have the issue of how much moral weight should be placed on the abortion issue, where other people will say, well, we need to look at poverty, we need to look at abstaining from war, and kind of have a whole life ethic, not just focus on abortion. And so with even between the young and the old, I think many of the older evangelicals have very, very firm convictions on abortion, and there's some, I think, some softening in the younger generation as well, as far as the will to act on it and what should be our policy on it and what should be our strength of conviction towards it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I think the current state of abortion right now, and just where that debate is within the church. And as people are talking about social justice and racism and fighting all these things, one of the major issues I think that should be in the discussion is, do you afford humanity and the rights of humanity? Do you believe that that little zygote is made in the image of God? Okay. So what I want to do is we're going to kind of set the table today. And I want to give you some definitions of abortion. Then we're going to look at some statistics. Then if we have time, we're going to go into kind of a history of how it has advanced in the U.S. And then eventually we're going to start addressing the issues of, you know, what does the Bible say about it? That how does the Bible answer this question? Is a human being? One, is it a human being? And I think the obvious genetic answer would be, it's a human being. The zygote is a human being, because what else could it be? It's not a tree. It's not a raccoon.
Not a fish.
Not a fish. It's a human being. The zygote is a genetically independent creation that within the zygote, it has all that it needs to grow and develop into a fully formed human being. Theoretically, you can even put that zygote in another womb independent of the mother, right? You see this with surrogacy, and it will grow into the same human being that it would be if it was in the mother. It doesn't share the same, it's not tissue, because it's not, it is tissue, but not the mother's tissue. It's an independent,
it's genetic
distinct,
yeah.
Right? So it's clearly a human being. And then you get into a broader discussion, which I think makes the abortion debate extra fascinating, is why do human beings have rights? And I think for our progressive atheistic friends, why do human beings have rights? Why do we have more rights than animals?
Although that gap is narrowing.
It is narrowing, but I think they're trying to be consistent. I think people understand it.
Yeah.
So why do we have rights and other people don't? Why? Okay, because we have senses. We can respond. We can react. So I can respect vegetarians for that reason. You're going to say something, Scott?
Yeah, it was just along those lines that there's sort of a vacuum. There's no foundation for why what makes a person other than a blob of chemical reactions. And so oftentimes it's that we have meaningful experiences and relationships that we value. You know, that's like a very subjective, and so we'll see that tie into a lot of our other issues like euthanasia. Oh, if the person is not conscious, or if they're not able to, you know,
have a quality of life.
Have a quality of life that the person talking about it deems to have quality.
Yeah. According to whom knows?
According to the right.
Yeah.
And so it leads a lot of times when you carry those out, it leads to these obviously ridiculous moralities and reasonings, but often that it's not ever carried out to the end.
Yeah.
What does that reasoning lead to? What is that definition for humanity lead to?
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that's the difference between the Christian worldview and the secular worldview, is we believe that people have human rights and they are human persons because they are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
In a secular worldview that would endorse abortion, they would say that just because you're a human being doesn't mean that you're a human person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get into a debate, so what is it that makes somebody a human person? Which incidentally is why some ethicists will say, well, you have to be able to respond and communicate and interact with the world. And they'll say, so infanticide would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have not reached that stage of development where they can do that. independence.
What about a person who cannot function? That includes them also. You mean you have someone who's in a bed who cannot communicate, function
without
help?
They are
a human being, but they're no longer a person in that case. Right. So that, I mean, that's where all of this goes. And then you get into the issue, well, who defines personhood? Who defines personhood?
And the big question is that, do they have to be in that state temporarily? Because theoretically,
if
you drug me, I could be in that state.
Right.
Or does it have to be permanent? Because every baby, that is not a permanent stage.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, what you're saying is, like, that's the issue, is that on that side, that's where those questions are being asked, which to us is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we even asking these questions? But that is where those questions are being asked. How long
and
does
it
have to be in a coma?
It becomes dangerous because then you're going to open the door for them to say, okay, well, that person isn't doing these things. You're right. That person isn't doing these things. So now we're going to go attack that.
So then
exactly.
So there's no divine revelation of divine authority to define that. Then who defines that?
Yes. And
community
it,
consensus.
Or it reveals that it's almost a sacred valuing of the individual's voice. So obviously anyone who doesn't voice, right, unborn, you know, inability to speak or communicate, you know, anyone who can't voice their value, right, then we're able to just assign them, well, they have no value because they can't speak up for their own rights or their want to live. And then when we tie into suicide, well, if that voice says that they don't value that life, then that life has no value also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sacred. The only value that a person's life has is what they themselves attribute to it.
Yeah.
And if they can't attribute any value to their life, then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And the slide just has to do with the fact that we don't have a standard anymore. I think Russell shared a thing that was a video this week on Facebook that said by whose standard, and it was talking about how all of these things have happened because they're adjusting what the standard is.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going back to scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you kind of have
everything.
Yeah, so you kind of have like two different ways of kind of defining personhood and humanity. One is like God defines man, and man relates to God. When you take God out of the picture, unless you're radically independent, right, man is defined by men. And so, and I use that in the...
I would say being independent at the extreme of this would actually be dangerous. You know what I mean?
Well, to the extreme, but then who says that man is independent?
Right.
You know, yet there's a higher authority, and it's usually men. I mean, we live in the day and age of Wikipedia where truth is a community construct. It's the input of the community that defines it. And so who's to say that one community is right and the other one is wrong?
I mean, historically, these ideas have been developed, like, in the university,
mm-hmm.
right? And then executed by whoever has the most power.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Nazi ideals and Marxism were taught in university long before they were executed.
They had standards, life unworthy of life.
Yeah.
Standards of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, non-persons.
Yeah.
Right? So you see, when you start...
But that
didn't... So who defines a human person? Is it man or is it God? So those are the stakes. I mean, when we talk about abortion and stuff, I mean, this is there's a worldview in place where if you were to say that abortion, we should reduce the number of abortions, and we should discourage abortions, and abortion is wrong. The question I always ask somebody who's kind of flirting with this is I ask him, is abortion murder? Because that's the issue. Not is it wrong? Is it murder? Because murder implies that it's a human person made in the image of God. So is abortion murder? So that's really the issue. Well, let's look at, and you guys know my answer. Yes. So we'll look at how those babies are murdered. And I'm going to just kind of read this to you. So when we talk about abortion, I mean, it's a violent act. It's a violent act. And so I'm going to read this to you. I'm not going to show it to you, okay? But abortion procedures. First one is suction aspiration. This procedure is used in 80% of first trimester abortions. With the mouth of the cervix should be dilated. the doctor inserts a hollow tube with a knife-like edge tip into the wound. The suction force is 28 strong, times stronger than a vacuum cleaner and literally tears the developing baby to pieces and sucks the remains into a container. Dilation and cutterage, known as DNC, is a procedure which involves dilating the cervix with a series of instruments to allow the insertion of a curette, a loop-shaped knife, into the womb. The instrument is used to scrape the placenta from the uterus and then to cut the baby apart. The pieces are then drawn through the cervix, and the tiny body must then be reassembled by an attending nurse to make sure that no parts remain in the womb to cause infection. And so, I mean, this is a procedure that's done for stillborn children, you know, as well. But for later-term pregnancies, that's what they use. Saline injection, also known as salt poisoning, is an abortion procedure which involves removing some of the amniotic fluid surrounding the baby and replacing it with toxic saline solution. The baby then breathes and swallows the solution, and 1 or 2 hours, the unborn child dies from salt poisoning, dehydration, and hemorrhaging. Their mother goes into labor about 24 hours later and delivers a dead or dying baby. Hysterotomy. This one's pretty gruesome. During the first 3 months of pregnancy, abortions are performed. During the last 3 months of pregnancy, abortions are performed by hysterotomy, which involves opening the womb surgically and removing the baby as in a cesarean section. However, the purpose of this procedure is to end the infant's life, and instead of being cared for, the baby is wrapped in a blanket, set aside, and allowed to die. Postaglandin. This abortion procedure involves the use of chemicals developed by the Upjohn Pharmaceutical Company. Prostaglandin hormones injected into the womb or released in a vaginal suppository cause the uterus to contract and deliver the child prematurely, too young to survive. The saline solution is sometimes injected first, killing the baby before birth in order to make the procedure less distressful to the mother and medical staff. Then RU486, also known as a morning after pill. This is taken orally with the intent of blocking certain hormones which allow the fertilized egg to develop normally in the womb. While it is labeled in the morning after pill, it is most effective when taken between weeks 7 and 9 of gestation. The obvious appeal of this drug is that it allows for a non-invasive abortion procedure. However, research has shown that the fatality rate is at least 14 times higher than such aspiration abortions. So you see, as the baby gets older, killing the baby gets harder.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why you have to try to make it discreet, invisible. But yeah, it's...
And then partial birth.
There's partial birth, yeah.
Can you explain that last sentence on F a little bit better? Starting at however.
Research has shown that the fatality rate is at least 14 times higher than such aspiration abortions.
For the mother.
For the mother.
Yeah,
for the mother. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about two different people.
Yeah.
They're not concerned about that.
Yeah.
So
and then part. Yeah, go ahead.
So the fatality rate is talking about the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then such aspiration abortions.
That's when they do the suction.
So it should
aspiration.
Be suction aspiration.
Yeah.
The wording is confusing me. It might
be
suction
aspiration.
Okay.
All right,
I've got some editing to do. So I got found a few typos, sorry.
Okay.
You're good. Yeah. Yeah, then you have partial birth abortion, which is, I think they have the baby born backwards and they basically suck out the brains or cut the spinal cord, right? Is that how they do it?
Yeah, I mean, if it's born breech, but if it's any other way, it doesn't matter. They deliver everything except for the entire baby.
Mm-hmm.
They usually
the
cut it.
Because
part of it is still inside.
Yeah, part of it
still has
to be in the vaginal canal, and then they...
Yeah, that's pretty gruesome. Really gruesome.
I think, here for a long time, we have thought that killing the baby after it's born is like a rare thing, or that it just doesn't happen. But I was watching the One Child Nation documentary,
mm-hmm.
and it was talking about how these nurses, starting in 1979, were delivering babies and killing them after birth because that's how they just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And these were, you know, the huge numbers of
mm-hmm.
babies.
Yeah.
So for us, like for me, I would have never thought about that.
Yeah.
But it's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't see how is it Which one was the one where they? Yeah, D. How does that any different than you take your baby home, wrap it in a blanket, set it in the other room, and walk away? That would be considered murder.
Yes. Yeah, and so that's where some of these laws are getting fuzzy too, because are we going to start prosecuting moms for doing that?
Well, yeah, you should.
Prosecuting doctors.
I know, but
I
mean, we're going to quit.
Anybody involved?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Are we going to stop doing that?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's the Planned Parenthood is never give an inch. There's an increasing radical commitment to abortion. That's why when he had, a couple years ago, you had the undercover sting operation.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about selling and trafficking body parts and how that's not being enforced. It was interesting how he got in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Not the abortion clinics who are doing that. Yeah.
He's still in court for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
David Daladin, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's gruesome. It is gruesome. And I think sometimes they, you know, they do it in the doctor's office. You can't see it. I mean, they try to keep it invisible. So I don't know. I haven't seen that movie, Unplanned. Is that it? Any of you guys see that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that's a real, actually show
amazing.
It. Yeah. So let's look at the state of abortion in 2019. I do an addendum. I've kind of learned that research and statistics get old, so I'm just going to do supplements.
Yeah.
No.
This is good.
So I got this from a friend of mine has a website called abort73.com. And so it's a great resource that lays out the arguments for it, biblically, ethically, genetically. And these are the statistics that they compiled. I kind of learned that trying to figure out the amount of abortions in the U.S. is difficult. California, for instance, will not track them. New York does not track them. And so
plus
this,
we have the morning after pill.
Yeah, so
you can't really track that.
How many times that was prescribed. So this is the Guttmacher Institute, and it's a pro-abortion group that kind of tracks it, but they gave their best guess, okay, so including California and New York and stuff. So this is the estimated number of abortions, and kind of interesting, you notice how abortion has fallen pretty significantly. Not sure all the reasons why, but it has gone down by close to 500,000.
Okay, this is by people who are pro-abortion.
Yeah.
Well, of course it went down. They
well,
want to look good. I mean,
well,
they look good, but they want to look good.
Nothing
well,
to see here, folks.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and I do think there probably is some factors that contribute to this. Number one, the average age, like if you look at 1996 versus 2017, the average age of a teenager losing their virginity has gone up 1 year in that time. Now, you might think that's because of abstinence education and everything. The reality is, I think because of pornography and
yes.
social media.
They don't have the energy for each other. I mean...
Well,
they're so apathetic.
Well, I think, and a lot of them, I think, are just relationally challenged. Like dating in high school doesn't happen as much as it used to back when. So I think that might be part of the reason. Perhaps birth control is more widely available, but I think that's probably some of the reason why it has gone down.
Yeah, you can't get pregnant by sexting.
Yeah,
which is what they're more likely to do.
Uh huh. If you kind of go down to the bottom, I just kind of highlighted a couple of things. One, Eastern Europe, the number of abortions in Eastern Europe is huge. And basically in that former Soviet Union, abortion was the means of birth control. You know, that's how they regulated it. And so when you look at former Soviet republics, it is extremely high. So you have so you compare, let's say, those republics with the United States. United States is still top 10. I mean, we have more abortions here than you have in Western Europe. The reason why Europe is higher than North America is because they're being pulled up by the number of abortions happening in Russia and those countries. States with the highest percentage of pregnancies that were aborted, District of Columbia, New Jersey, and then New York. Lowest percentage, Idaho, South Dakota, and Wyoming. In 2015, this is the second page.
Oh,
question on the first page.
Uh-huh.
Has the definition of abortion changed from 96 to 17?
No.
So it's still...
I mean, they're trying to be statistically honest.
Well, I'm just saying, from what he had said, that, of course, you know, of course the numbers look good. Are people changing the definition of abortion in order to reduce the numbers to look better on the news?
Right. Does this include the morning after pill? Because I'm not sure it does. I read up on or are these clinically administered?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Abortions, because that was a very different question. We have much more effective ways of doing it at home now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Those are harder to track.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Well, and some of them are over the counter. Or behind the counter. I mean, like you just ask for it, you don't have to have a prescription.
Yeah. Maybe I should kind of go in. Because it does talk about the kinds, later on we talk about the kinds of abortions that take place. Let's look at it.
That's just what I thought, based on what Sean said. It's like, when I took statistics, the first lesson was there's lies, lies, then statistics.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And that
right.
The definition of abortion is changing to go into a place like Planned Parenthood to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the chemical abortion.
Right.
So the number is reducing because people can do it at home now. If it's easier, if it's more accessible,
yeah.
Make it, but
yeah.
Just
right, because when you see who is doing the abortions, they're still talking about clinics.
Yeah. Yeah, and chemical abortions, the morning after pill and stuff like that, is yeah, there probably are some drawbacks, like you have to give birth to a dead fetus. And there's you hope. It could fail. If you really want to do it right and have it taken care of in one day, the clinic is where to go. But I think the chemical abortions are going to happen more in states like Kansas and Wyoming and places where there's no access because it's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
According to that movie, we saw that the morning after pill was a very severe thing for the mother.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it is the most dangerous form.
Right.
But it's the one that you're most likely to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a young person who doesn't want it to be known,
yeah.
And wants to be done with it, you're going to think this is the easiest way.
Yeah. So 2015, you see 35% of all pregnancies in New York City, excluding spontaneous miscarriages. So when we talk about abortion, we're not including miscarriages. It's the intentional termination of the child in the womb. Who has abortions? Unmarried women account for 86% of all abortions. Among married women, 4% of pregnancies end in abortion. Among unmarried women, 27% of pregnancies end in abortion. Women in their 20s account for the majority of abortions in 2015 and have the highest abortion rates. And then you can kind of see the breakdown. So you see the young professional years, college and young professional years are the ones where you have most of the abortions. Women living with a partner to whom they are not married account for 25% of abortions, but only 10% of the population. And so you probably see with that statistic that the partner has a lot of influence over whether or not to keep the baby or not. Yeah, I'm not ready for this to go serious. Among women who attained abortion, 41% had no prior births. And this is interesting. Among white women, 10% of pregnancies currently end in abortion. Among black women, 28% end in abortion. So black women are 3.5% times more likely to have an abortion than white women.
And this issue is one place where you can really try and dig in at the contradiction between trying to be people that get so caught up on race and equality because it's so disproportionately... Mm-hmm. There's much higher rate of abortions.
Yeah.
The common statistics that was quoted is that I think in New York the last few years there were more abortions than live births among black women. More abortions than live births.
Yeah.
So it's over half the pregnancies ended in abortion.
Yeah.
Which is very disproportionate.
Yeah, women on Medicaid are 3 times as high. So basically, poor women. And if you look at where do Planned Parenthood, where do they plant the clinics? Yeah, where is it in Wichita? Is it still in Wichita? It's in a poor neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a poor neighborhood. So why do abortions occur? Page 3. Victim of rape, less than 0.5%. Fetal health problems, 3%. Physical health problems. And then you kind of get it would interfere with education or career, not mature enough to raise a child, don't want to be a single mother, done having children, can't afford a baby, not ready for a child or other.
These are not the statistics that get thrown around when they
mm-hmm.
present this as healthcare.
Yeah. They want to talk about woman raped, a child, health of the mother.
That tends to be the case with anything you look at. You talk about homosexuality, they're going to make it look like everybody's doing this, but really the percentages are small in compared to the general population. They're going to take that little number and make it seem like everybody's doing it.
Yeah, I think one tactic I've noticed, I was talking to Becky about this, is the child shield. You know how terrorists will use human shields to advance their cause? You know, if you attack me, you're going to hurt this child. Often, it's amazing at how much of an agenda is set by putting the children to be advocates. And so if you attack the issue that the child is advocating, you're attacking the child, and look at you, you're attacking a child.
Well, like Greta.
I didn't say it. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, so often, you know, it's about children, it's about gay youths, it's about these young teenagers who are terrified of their fathers, and how they would be kicked out of the house if the parents knew that they got pregnant. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about protecting the children. So we need to murder babies to protect the children, right? When do abortions occur? 89% happened in the first trimester. 8% happened between 14 and 20 weeks. 1.3 occurred after 21 weeks of gestation. And so if you took a look at that, 1.3% of 1 million, I mean, that's... over 10,000. That's 13,000. That's half the population of Emporia. How does abortion take place? And this might clarify some things. Medical abortions account for 39% of all abortions. 73% of reported abortions were accomplished by Cutteridge. Most Cutteridge abortions are suction procedures. Medical abortions made up 27% of all abortions in 2015. 96% of the more than 140,000 second trimester abortions that occur was by D&E.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Are they saying medical as opposed to surgical?
I don't know.
Because
it seems like it's all medical.
The birth control, the RU486 and all those would be medical, and dilation and curettage would be surgical.
Okay.
Suction would be surgical. So I don't know what they're
right.
They saying that most of these now are...
It could be.
I mean, they're... It's an interesting use of words. I wonder what they're...
Yeah, I just copy and pasted this.
The numbers don't match up if that's it. 73% were curettage, 39% are medical.
That was in 2015 and 2017.
Right. Which is, you know, probably too close together to have that big of a swing in method.
Yeah. So this might, this next one might kind of explain why some of the abortion rates have gone down. In 2017, abortions were performed in 1,587 different facilities, a 5% decline from 2014. Between 2014 and 2017, the number of hospitals performing abortions declined by 19%. So part of the reason for the decrease of abortion could be the rising Virginia rate, but also there has been a reduction of abortion centers. Like, you don't have as, I mean, it's harder, I think Alabama is down to one abortion center, and even that was threatened with clothing.
Mississippi.
Yeah, Missouri was down to one. And so there has been an effective means of reducing the number of abortion centers to the point where somebody has to drive 2 hours to get an abortion now, right?
So I'm curious, if someone comes to their doctor or
mm-hmm.
a hospital with something going on, they need an abortion, can that be done? And
so
would that be considered in these things?
No. Because to me, those are already non-viable pregnancies. So if a woman, this happens a lot, so women come in and they're miscarrying, right? And they're bleeding, bleeding, bleeding. The baby's still in the uterus, but the baby is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you send them to surgery and they get a DNC.
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's
not an abortion.
That's not clear.
Because you're
that's
not
why
ending
I keep saying
the life of the baby.
Right. So the that's why they keep specifying that in the statistics. The reason I'm asking this is because, you know, there's a debate about how doctors are going to be forced to, or nurses will be forced to do abortions. And I'm just wondering, that's not necessarily going on unless they're working in an abortion clinic at this point.
No, the issue now is referral.
Yeah.
So they would have to give the referral to go.
Yeah, so I won't refer. So that's happened before where somebody's come in and they've turned up pregnant and they're like, I want an abortion. Like, I don't refer for those. But I can show you like who you can talk to or, you know, like.
But this heathen over here.
No, but yeah, go him and he'll help you get one. No, we don't do that. But, you know, and I think all of us in the ER are like that, pretty like-minded.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point being that that is coming,
mm-hmm.
This arm twisting.
Yeah.
So this is maybe a medical question. So thinking about our ideal scenario, right? So we decide, we pass legislation, abortions, 100% illegal, it's immoral. So
mm-hmm.
then how would we address someone that needs, like, so that the doctors can say, oh, this baby's dead. I mean, like, is that pretty...
Because
that dry medically to know.
Yeah, you put an ultrasound wand on there, and
check,
there's
no
heartbeat, and
yeah.
Your mom's in just extremis, and you know you do what you get. You know, and sometimes the mom is dying, and the baby is in a way. Maybe the baby's not dead yet, but there's no way the baby's going to survive
mm-hmm.
because of the conditions.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just important that like what we're arguing for, we can still explain
mm-hmm.
how we can still protect.
That's never been the issue. That's
yeah.
the thing.
Right.
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 Yeah,
that's
I think it's all about objective. The objective of an abortion procedure is to terminate the life of
mm-hmm.
yeah.
The child. The objective of ectopic is to save the life of a mother,
right.
not to kill the child.
Right.
So I think that's the intent of procedure. The intention of a DNC to remove a baby
yeah.
you know, who's passed away is to protect the life of the mother,
right.
not
yeah.
to kill the baby.
And so sometimes, just two things, when like you're saying, how the one in a million is used to develop a rule for the other 999.
Yeah.
It's good to both state that that's the extreme rarity, and
mm-hmm.
also to be able to explain what your
yeah.
policy
mm-hmm.
is on
yeah.
that extremity.
On that
yeah.
yeah.
So this, although this is not the way, you don't develop the rule based on the one millionth of a percent, but in the rare case, this is what
which has always been, that's the thing. They've made it into an issue that never was.
Right.
It wasn't an issue.
Let's look at abortion and contraception on page 5. 51% of women having abortion used birth control during the month they became pregnant. 9 out of 10 women at risk of unintended pregnancy are using birth control method. And then oral contraceptives are the most widely used reversible method of contraception, carry failure rates of 6 to 8% in actual practice.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so there's some other things to kind of, for you guys kind of stick around, but abort23.com, the link to the website is on the front page in the footnote. Next week we won't be having class.
Wow, 40% of minors having an abortion report that neither of their parents knew about the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And, so we're not going to meet next week. And then Scott's going to do some of the legal history of it and get into some of the topics. But, yeah, I think some good things to think through and to pray about. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this will kind of help us to advocate more for the life of the unborn.
I have one more thing to say about third term.
Okay.
Third trimester abortions or late term. So there are cases where the mother's life is in jeopardy at the end of a pregnancy because of high blood pressure or because of, why can't I think of the name now? But there are conditions that develop. But the prescription is to deliver the baby because those babies are viable at 20 to 22 weeks. So there's never a need for the life of the mother to kill
mm-hmm.
an infant in the birth canal before it's born.
Yeah.
Never. There just isn't.
Yeah.
The the treatment is to deliver the baby, who will most likely survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and pray, then we'll move on to the next phase of our worship. Well, Father, I do thank you for just the truth that's out there, right? I thank you for the declining abortion rates. I pray that we'll be eliminated someday. Obviously, it will when your son returns to establish his kingdom. I pray for just many of the mothers or the pregnant teenagers or young adults who are at the Emporia State University. I pray that you will lead them not to take the life of their unborn child. I pray for just the pro-life ministries that are kind of associated with, that you will help them to advocate, and not only advocate saving the life of the mother or life of the child, but also the soul of the family as well. We pray this in Christ's name.